Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
Now, I should have Alan Blackman on the line, do I?
I hope you do.
It's great to hear your voice, Alan. How are you doing?
Oh, yes. Well, we're sort of coping, I guess, pre-lockdown and everything. This is a beautiful day outside and stuff. So, yeah, it's all nice out here in West Auckland.
Yes, beautiful. That's very lovely. Do you have to continue teaching while you are off?
No. We are sort of closed down as of yesterday. So, I guess it's in the lap of the gods. What's going to happen with respect to all of that? We're still waiting to sort of finally find out.
Because that basically puts a 4-week hold on your classes.
Yeah, essentially. So, and then whatever happens after that, we will be told, I guess. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, I suppose let's jump into Dear Science and talk about exponential increase.
Why not? Okay, so... No, fire away.
Well, I mean, this in terms of what you're going to tell us is not necessarily related to what is going on, but it is useful to know about exponential increase.
I certainly think so. I guess there's been a lot of mention in the news recent times about this thing of an exponential increase, obviously with respect to a certain virus that is out there and the number of people that could potentially be infected by that. So my feeling was that perhaps, you know, there'd be quite a few people out there who aren't necessarily familiar with the whole concept of exponential growth or exponential increase. And so I thought I would recount an ancient tale that may have come from India, it may have come from Persia. When I heard it was certainly Persian, but sort of looking it up on the internet, it seems to be Indian. And again, when I heard it when I was a kid, it was all about the invention of chess.
We're just, you're going in and out there. Sorry, Alan, if we just, I'm not sure whether it's your phone or our phone.
Very, very possibly out here. Okay. How's that?
I'll perfect. That right. Stay right there. Don't move.
Okay, I'm not moving. Okay. So apparently the person who invented chess, he gave it to the head of Persia or India or whatever it was at the time. Apparently, this is the old story I'd heard. And in return for inventing this wonderful game, he just asked the leader. He said, "Right, okay, so just all you got to do is give me one grain of rice for the first square on the chessboard, two pieces of rice for the second square, four for the third, eight for the fourth, 16 for the fifth, etc., etc., etc." And so the leader thought, "Oh yeah, this is pretty good. I'm going to get away with this pretty easily." So what was happening, obviously, was doubling the number of grains of rice on each successive square. So there's 64 squares on a chessboard. And so then the question is, if we double the number of grains of rice on each square of the chessboard, how many grains of rice does the leader of the country end up owing this guy that invented chess? And
a lot? Does that end up being a lot?
Yeah. The leader wasn't too sort of savvy about this. And so to put it in numbers, it was, or it is, 18 quintillion, 446 quadrillion, 744 trillion, 73,709,551,615 grains of rice.
Are you serious?
Which is quite a few.
How many squares are on a chessboard?
There's 64 squares on a chessboard. Okay. So what we've got there is essentially a number that is very close to 2 to the power of 64.
Yes,
and
of course.
This is an example of an exponential increase or exponential growth. And in other words, what we're saying is that you're growing by a constant factor or a rate every particular unit of time. So in this case, let's say if you had one grain of rice on the first day, you'd have two on the second day, four on the third day, eight on the fourth day, etc., etc. By the time you've got to 64 days, you're going to have roughly 2 to the power of 64 grains of rice, which
wow.
is that enormous number that
okay.
I said before, 18 quintillion.
How does that apply here? How can we think about that in terms of COVID-19?
How can we think about that? Well, so let's assume that somebody is unlucky enough to come down with this virus, and let's say they infect two people, and then those two people go and infect two other people, and those two other people infect, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So everybody is basically infecting two people. And, you know, let's assume that this goes every day. So the first person infects two people on the first day, they infect two people each the second day, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. At the end of 64 days, we'd be basically wiped out, pretty much.
Whoa.
So that's what an exponential increase does. You know, it is quite extraordinary. You increase at an enormous rate, and in fact, at an ever increasing rate, I guess. So when you say
wiped out, in terms of this particular virus, there are obviously the cases of people who are recovering. But what you're saying is when you get to that point where there's that many people who are sick, you're putting a certain pressure on hospitals.
Of course, yeah. And all I'm saying here is about the number of people who, you know, potentially would be infected. And, you know, there's about 7 billion people on the planet, 7 or 8 billion. And, you know, under this exponential growth model, you're basically all infected well within a month, I think, under those conditions. So,
so this is pretty much why we're in lockdown.
Indeed, absolutely it is, yeah. And so, you know, we need to be enormously careful out there. We need to follow the rules of these impending 4 weeks, which is going to be not very much fun for anybody at all. But having said that, if everybody sort of obeys the rules and stuff, then we're going to come out at the other side of this way, way, way better than we went in.
Okay.
And one point that was made just very recently was that you know, what we are going to do in the next 2 weeks is probably see still an increase in the number of infections, because these infections will have happened already before we go into the lockdown. So, you know, they will have happened in the last week. So those are the infections that we are going to see. The numbers are going to steadily rise. So people are going to be thinking in the first week or two of this, watching the numbers rise, oh, hell, this isn't doing any good. We, you know, bugger it, let's go out there and party. No, for goodness sake, be tempted to do that. Because that's, you know, what we're seeing are going to be the infections prior to these lockdown measures that are going to be occurring. And, you know, things being well, we should see, you know, the curve flatten. That's what everybody's talking about, flattening the curve and everything. Everyone's got to play their part in this.
Yes, indeed. Okay, thank you for that explanation, Alan. Shall we talk about penguins now?
We shall talk about penguins, because science doesn't stop in these days. It's a really interesting story, this. So there's an island in sort of the southern Indian Ocean called the Île du Cochon, or Île au Cochon, sorry, my French. And this is a 67 square kilometre subantarctic island. Well, they call it a subantarctic island, but in fact it's on the same latitude as Invercargill. I didn't know that Invercargill was subantarctic.
Wow.
But anyway, there was a French seabird ecologist with the wonderful name of Henri Weimarskirch. And he lodged aerial photos of this little island, the Île au Cochon. And it looked really different to what he was expecting. And on the Île au Cochon is the second largest, or indeed was the second largest, colony of penguins on the planet. Mm. And these are king penguins. So they're about a metre tall, and they're quite impressive specimens. And
are there any female king penguins?
Are there any female king penguins? I hope so, otherwise they wouldn't.
They wouldn't be able to reproduce. Okay. Continue, Alan, sorry.
But so what it looked like from aerial photos was that up to around about 90% of the colony that was known to be there had just disappeared. And this was in 2017. This was early 2017 they noticed this. And we're talking around about 900,000 to a million birds just gone somewhere. And
what?
So the question was, what had happened to these? And so this island, it's, you know, it's remote as anything, and you have to get special permission to land on and everything. And so they did this. So they planned an expedition. They finally got there in November 2019. They were allowed to stay for 5 days. This was the first expedition to the island in 37 years, and they had to, in those 5 days, find out what the cause of the disappearance of penguins were, this enormous number of penguins. And so they set about looking for predators, so they're looking for cats, mice, rats, things like that. They took samples of penguin blood to look for, you know, sort of diseases and stuff like that. They took penguin bones. Again, they're analysing those for, you know, possible causes of death. The answers they came up with were that there were no land predators.
Wow.
That the penguins hadn't simply moved somewhere else on the island, otherwise they'd have easily seen those, or gone to sort of neighbouring islands. That, you know, they hadn't done that.
So what? They've just gone.
Well, yeah, and the birds that were there looked in good health, so it wasn't like some sort of disease had ravaged the whole colony or anything like that. And so what they think must have been going on here is, again, climate change and sea temperatures. So apparently where these penguins feed, what they do when they're breeding, one of the penguins sits on the egg, the other one goes swimming, and they swim fantastic distances, about 500 kilometres.
Wow.
To get a lot of food and stuff like that. And they particularly like these things called lanternfish. And in order to get the lanternfish, what they generally do is they swim south to a thing called the Antarctic Convergence, or the Sub-Antarctic Front. And that's where all the cold water from the Antarctic meets the warmer water sort of from the Indian Ocean. And at these convergences, there's lots and lots and lots of sea life there. And so there's lots and lots and lots of fish. And so they're very sort of fertile feeding grounds for the penguins. And what appears to have happened is that that Antarctic convergence has moved south. And so instead of having to swim the 500 kilometres, they've now had to swim further.
Oh,
and
wow.
Obviously in swimming further, some of them turn back because they don't, you know, because it's just too far for them, you know, or others just don't make it. Or, you know, in this longer wait, the ones that are on the egg, they decide, bugger it, we're going to go swimming as well. And so they leave the egg, and then they get predated by seabirds and skuas and all those sorts of things. And so this appears to be a manifestation of, sadly, climate change.
That's devastating.
The warming of the world's oceans, which really is truly tragic.
That is a very not very nice story, Alan.
I'm sorry, I don't make them up. I just, you know.
You're just telling us. Wow. Okay. What?
But yeah, no, it is absolutely terrible. You know, this is a million penguins just gone. Scary.
That's probably happening, you know, fairly often around the world.
Yes, one would certainly think so. But you know, it's just really obviously manifested here in this tiny, tiny little out of the way back and beyond island, and you know, the middle of the southern Indian Ocean. So I'm sure if it was happening somewhere a little bit more populated, everyone would be taking notice of this. This should be sort of front page news, I would have thought.
Okay, maybe we can make it some front page news on BFM. We're looking for stories to keep people, I suppose, talking about other things going on as well at the same time. So perhaps let's finish on this, I guess, hopefully positive story about the Milky Way.
Well, it's neutral, at the very least it's neutral. But how big is the Milky Way is the question.
I don't know.
Well, now we do know, apparently, and it is roughly 1.9 million light years across, according to Alice Deason and co-workers at Durham University in the UK. So why is this a big deal, you may ask?
I mean, yes, certainly I ask.
Well, funny you may ask, yeah, but... So it's a big deal because for the very reason that we don't really know how big the Milky Way is up until now. Now, the Milky Way is the galaxy in which we all reside, us, our sun, all the planets in our solar system. They are part of the larger whole, which is the Milky Way, which you can certainly see at night spread across the heavens.
But you certainly can't see all of it.
Well, indeed. But, you know, that's one of, you know, literally hundreds and thousands and millions and billions of galaxies that are in the universe. How do we go about measuring the size of this? Well, we can see a lot of it because, obviously, there's lots of stars in the Milky Way. But the trouble is that we can't see a lot of it as well because of this mysterious thing called dark matter. And we still don't know what dark matter is. People are working on it, but... dark matter doesn't emit light, and so therefore we can't see a large part of our galaxy, I guess. So if we can't see it, how do we go about measuring it? So these very bright people at Durham have been using basically computer simulations to answer this question. And what they have done is that they have realized that other massive galaxies in the universe have a particular gravitational pull, obviously a massive gravitational pull because they are very massive themselves. And what that does is it affects the movement of neighboring galaxies. Obviously, it pulls on smaller neighboring galaxies. And so what they then did was to look at the gravitational effects of the Milky Way on small neighboring galaxies, do some computer simulations as to how this was affecting their motion, and then they figured out that, yeah, they came to this number of around about 1.9 million light years across.
Wow.
And just to reiterate, a light year, remember, is the distance that light travels in 1 year. And the speed of light travels 300,000 kilometers per second.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
So you can imagine that one light year is a long way. 1.9 million light years is a long way.
Okay, so it's fairly big. That's what we've learned.
It is. Yep.
We are very small then. Well,
indeed,
Alan, yes. We might leave it there if that's all right with you. And it's going to be weird because normally we have a little chat after I play the sting, but I'm going to have to hang up on you now.
I know.
Take care. Stay at home.
Yep, will do. And you too, and all the listeners as well. Good luck to you all over the next 4 weeks. I hope we all make it through okay.
We will indeed hear from you in 2 weeks, though.
Will do, absolutely.
All right, all the best. See you later, Alan.
Take it easy. See ya. Bye.
That was Alan. I miss him already.
Mind blowing. That was Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.